Hello, thanks for joining us for this episode of Into the Killing. If you know of any cold cases you want us to cover on Into the Killing, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com, then go to the Suggest a Case page. For this episode, we're going back to April 1975. On April 4th, 1975, two friends from Seattle, Washington, Bill Gates and Paul Allen, founded Microsoft. Allen and Gates met in high school and bonded over their love of computers. In early 1975, Allen showed Gates an article in Popular Mechanics about the Altair 8800 mini computer kit manufactured by a small company, Micro Instrumentation and Telemetry Systems, also known as MITS. At the time, Allen worked as a programmer at Honeywell and Gates was a student at Harvard. They contacted MITS and told them they were working on a software program written with the computer language Beginner's All-Purpose Symbolic Instruction Code, or BASIC, that could run on the Altair. MITS asked for a demonstration. The problem was that Gates and Allen didn't have an Altair. Nevertheless, they spent 2 months writing the software at the computer lab at Harvard. Then Allen took the software to MITS without testing it, and it worked. After this, on April 4th, 1975, Allen and Gates founded Microsoft. The name is a portmanteau, taking Microsoft from microprocessor and soft from software. They founded the company in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where MITS was headquartered. In 1979, Microsoft relocated to Bellevue, Washington. In 1981, they debuted MS-DOS, which IBM leased for their first personal computer. 2 years later, Allen stopped his day-to-day work with Microsoft after being diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma, but he remained on the board as vice president. Allen received treatment, and he survived. In 1985, Microsoft released their new operating system that would change the world, Windows. From there, Microsoft became one of the biggest companies in the world. Gates retired in March 2000 and has since focused on philanthropy. Paul Allen died in October 2018 at age 65. On April 8, 1975, 39-year-old Frank Robinson debuted as the player manager of the Cleveland Indians. Robinson was the first black person to manage a Major League Baseball team. It was Robinson's 19th season as a player. By all standards, he was an amazing player. He was the only player named the most valuable player in the National League and the American League. He was a 14-time All-Star. He also won two World Series, both with the Baltimore Orioles. In his debut game as player manager, he was second in the lineup, and he hit a home run on the first pitch. Robinson and the Indians went on to win that game 5-3. Robinson retired from playing after the next season. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1982, his first year of eligibility. He went on to manage the San Francisco Giants, the Baltimore Orioles, and the Montreal Expos, which later became the Washington Nationals. Robinson is credited with breaking new ground for people of color in Major League Baseball. He died in February 2018 at age 83. On April 30, 1975, Saigon, Vietnam was captured by the North Vietnamese, bringing the 19-and-a-half-year Vietnam War to an end. The main belligerents of the war were the Communist North Vietnamese and the Anti-Communist South Vietnamese. The North was supported by Communist regimes like China and the USSR, and the South was supported by democratic countries like the United States, making it a proxy war. The Vietnam War had devastating humanitarian cost. It's estimated that between 970,000 to 3 million Vietnamese soldiers and civilians were killed, and 58,281 American soldiers were killed. The first American troops arrived in March 1965. 8 years later, in March 1978, the last American troops were withdrawn from Vietnam. Just over 2 years later, on March 30, 1975, Saigon fell, making the Vietnamese the victors of the war. Over 50 years later, Vietnam is still considered a Marxist-Lenin state. On April 29, 1975, the number one song on the Billboard charts was He Don't Love You Like I Love You by Tony Orlando and Don. The number one movie was The Day of the Locust, which stars Donald Sutherland as Homer Simpson. However, it's not the same yellow cartoon character many people are familiar with. In April 1975, 25-year-old Hallie Ann Seaman was pursuing her master's in architecture at the University of Washington in Seattle, Washington. Hallie had come to Seattle from Idaho with her sister. Their father was the head of the philosophy department at the University of Idaho. According to the Seattle Times, Hallie was studying how to design high-quality, low-income housing. She had two more semesters to go before she got her master's. Hallie had a studio in the basement of the architecture building. Around 9:40 p.m. on April 29th, a fellow student saw her talking on the phone in her studio. She had her jacket on, so he assumed she was getting ready to leave for the night. He walked by her studio about 10 minutes later, and she was no longer there. Hallie was supposed to go see her boyfriend, then go to her sister's home, but she was a no-show. Hallie lived about 1.3 miles southwest of the university campus. When Hallie didn't show up at her boyfriend's or her sister's home, her sister went to her apartment. It did not look like she returned home either. Hallie drove a white 1965 Ford Fairlane station wagon. It was not in the parking lot at the architecture building. Hallie was reported missing on May 2nd, about 2.5 days after she was last seen and heard from. Around noon on April 30th, about 14 hours after Hallie was seen at the university, her dead body was found in some bushes of a parking lot about 1.7 miles south of her apartment and 3 miles from the university. Hallie lived on East Lake Avenue East, which is the main thoroughfare. Her body was found in a parking lot on East Lake Avenue. She had been sexually assaulted and stabbed to death. She had been stabbed on both sides of her torso, her abdomen, and her back. She did not have any identification on her, so she was not identified until she was reported missing. The same day that she was identified, her car was located. At 2:40 a.m. on April 30th, hours after Hallie had been murdered, the fire department had been called to a shipping container storage lot because a car was on fire. The car was about 3 miles south of where her body was found, just off the East Lake Avenue thoroughfare. Since the police did not know the body was Hallie, they did not connect the burnt car to her until after she was identified. The police believe the murder happened in the car. When Hallie's body was found, she was missing one shoe. The missing shoe was found in the car. The police appealed to the public for information. They got an interesting call from a woman who refused to give her name because she was so scared. She said she was driving home on the night Hallie was murdered and she was near the university. She saw an older white station wagon that was possibly a Ford. There were two men in the car. The driver had long, curly blonde hair, and the passenger had dark hair. She said that the driver put a woman in the backseat of the car. She looked unconscious or possibly dead. The caller said she was really disturbed by what she saw and wanted to help, but she thought doing so would put herself in danger. After driving away, she had second thoughts and returned to the area. But by the time she got there, the car was gone. The police could never confirm if this was Hallie, but they thought the chances were good. Hallie's boyfriend said she would pick up hitchhikers, but only if they looked like students. So the police thought that Hallie possibly picked up the wrong person or people. The police eventually developed a list of 120 persons of interest, but no arrests were made in the case. For decades, the case sat cold. In 2002, the evidence was examined for DNA and a profile was created, but no match was found. In 2017, the case was reopened and the cold case detective thought it was solvable. The key was finding a match to the DNA. When genetic genealogy became prominent, he wanted to use it to find the killer. But there was a problem. When the DNA profile was created in 2002, it used all the genetic material, so there was nothing to use for genetic genealogy. However, a chain of events that started in 2015 eventually led to the case being solved. Washington State had a massive backlog of more than 10,000 untested rape kits. In 2015, the state passed the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative legislation to try and clear the backlog. In 2019, they expanded the legislation to allow more DNA samples to be submitted to the FBI's Combined DNA Index System, aka CODIS. A retired detective working for the state attorney general decided to submit the DNA of a notorious criminal. In August 2023, the cold case investigator received an email stating that a DNA match had been found. The forensic scientist told him he would be surprised. The cold case investigator had been a homicide detective for 22 years and didn't think he could be shocked. But when he read the email, he was very surprised. It had been 48 years since 25-year-old Hallie Seaman had been raped and stabbed to death. A lot had changed in those nearly five decades. In 1975, some major movies that were released were Dog Day Afternoon, Rollerball, and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. 2023 was the summer of Barb and Hammer. On July 21, 2023, both Barbie and Oppenheimer debuted in theaters. Both movies were hits with the critics and audiences. Barbie made $1.4 million at the worldwide box office, while Oppenheimer took home $975 million. Oppenheimer also won 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, and Barbie won 1 Academy Award for Best Original Song. Another notable movie that was released in 2023 was Godzilla Minus One. Shows that debuted in 1975 were Space 1999, Starsky and Hutch, and Saturday Night Live. In October 2023, Saturday Night Live began their 48th season. Some popular TV shows in 2023 were The Last of Us, Beef, and Slow Horses. In 1975, the three biggest songs were Love Will Keep Us Together by Captain and Tennille, Rhinestone Cowboy by Glen Campbell, and Philadelphia Freedom by Elton John. 48 years later, the three biggest songs were Last Night by Morgan Wallen, Flowers by Miley Cyrus, and Kill Bill by SZA. It turned out that the forensic scientist was right. The cold case investigator was surprised by the DNA match. It was matched to a notorious criminal in the area. As previously mentioned, the police had a list of 120 suspects, but he was never on it. His name was Charles Rodman Campbell. Campbell was born in October 1954 in Hawaii. Shortly after his birth, his family moved to Washington. Campbell was an angry kid who bullied other children. When he was 10 years old, his behavioral problems became more prominent. He was smoking, drinking alcohol, and skipping school. When he was 12, he started using amphetamines. At age 13, he tried heroin. When he was 15, he had several brushes with the law. He stole a car. He and his friend were caught pushing over headstones in a cemetery, and he broke into an elementary school. In October 1969, when Campbell was 16, his father had him arrested for stealing a family car. While in custody, he called a friend and told him three times to shoot his father. Campbell was in a juvenile detention center for a few months. In 1971, Campbell stole a car and tried to elude the police. When the police caught him, he threatened to kill them. In July 1971, he was sentenced to a year for burglarizing a house. On December 11, 1974, 23-year-old Renee Wicklund was outside washing the windows of her home in Clearview, Washington. Clearview is about 25 miles from downtown Seattle. Renee's 8-month-old daughter, Shanna, was playing on the lawn. Suddenly, Renee noticed a young man running towards her. She grabbed Shanna and ran into the home. The man forced his way inside. Renee noticed he was armed with a knife. He held a knife close to Shanna and told Renee to undress or he'd kill Shanna. Renee did as she was ordered. He then demanded she perform oral sex on him, and once again she complied. Then the man left. Afterwards, she washed out her mouth and got dressed. She then took Shanna across the street to the home of Barbara Hendrickson. She told Barbara what happened. They locked the door, got a shotgun, and called the police. Renee described her attacker to the police. She thought he was in his early 20s. He was tall, around 6'5", and he had bushy red hair. Based on this description, the police thought it was 20-year-old Charles Campbell. They had his mugshot from one of his arrests, and they showed it to Renee. She instantly identified him as her kidnapper. Campbell managed to elude the police for over a year. He was then arrested in early 1976. On March 1, 1976, he stood in a police lineup. Renee viewed the lineup and immediately identified Campbell as the man who sexually assaulted her and threatened to kill her daughter. In April 1976, 22-year-old Charles Campbell went to trial. Renee and her neighbor, Barbara Hendrickson, both testified. Campbell was found guilty and he was sentenced to 30 years in prison. He could apply for parole after 7.5 years. This meant that the earliest he could be paroled was November 11, 1983. Renee Wicklund tried her best to move on with life. She ended up divorcing her husband. In 1978, he died in a car accident. She decided not to move out of the home where she was assaulted. Meanwhile, Campbell was not behaving in prison. He got in several fights with other inmates. He earned the nickname One Punch because one punch was usually all it took to win a fight or hurt someone he was bullying. He also raped at least two of his cellmates. One of them was a childhood friend. The correctional officers also knew he was dealing drugs. In the spring of 1982, 6 years after Renee was sexually assaulted, she was working as an accountant for a beauty school. On April 14, 1982, she was homesick. That afternoon, her neighbor, 51-year-old Barbara Hendrickson, went to her home to make her some Jell-O. When she didn't return home after a few hours, Barbara's husband, Don Hendrickson, went to Renee's home. He found his wife dead in a pool of blood in the entranceway. Her throat had been slit. He then went to check on Renee and 8-year-old Shanna. They were both dead as well. Don called 911. The police believe that 30-year-old Renee was killed first. She was found naked on the floor of her bedroom. She had been severely beaten with a blunt object. Her jaw and nose were broken. She had also been strangled. She had bled to death after her throat was cut. She had also been sexually mutilated. Then 8-year-old Shanna came home from school and found the killer there. He brought her into the room where her mother's dead body was lying on the floor. He strangled her, then slit her throat, nearly to the point of decapitation. Then 51-year-old Barbara Hendrickson walked in the door at the wrong time. The killer slit her throat as well. There was only one person who people thought would want to kill Renee, Shanna, and Barbara, and that was Charles Campbell. But they didn't think it was possible because he was serving a 30-year sentence for sexual assault. He was not eligible for parole for another year and a half. But the police knew it was possible because Campbell was free. On May 1, 1981, the Board of Prison Terms and Parole set aside his minimum term. About 2 months before the murders, in January 1982, he was placed in a work release facility. He could leave the facility during the day, but had to return at night. The facility was about 50 miles from Renee's home. When Campbell returned to the facility the night after the murders, he was intoxicated. He had a blood alcohol level of 0.29. 4 days later, he was arrested for the 3 murders. People question why Charles Campbell was placed in a work release program nearly 2 years before he was eligible for parole. The parole board said he was granted this because he had behaved in jail. But this was not true, as he had been in fights, raped other inmates, and trafficked drugs. The parole board said those records were not made available to them. Another problem was, in March 1982, a few weeks before the murders, Campbell's ex-wife went to the police and told them he had raped her several weeks earlier. Yet, nothing was done about it. Charles Campbell went to trial in November 1982. There was a lot of evidence against him. For example, his bloody fingerprints were found on a glass at the crime scene. Also, one of Shannon's earrings was found in Campbell's car. People also saw him leaving Renee's home. The trial lasted 15 days. Then the jury deliberated for 4 hours. They found him guilty of all 3 murders. The jury recommended he be sentenced to death. The judge followed their recommendation, and on December 17th, he sentenced Campbell to death. After the trial, the laws in Washington were changed. Victims of violent crimes and people who testify against the offender need to be notified when they are released. Charles Campbell fought his death sentence by filing appeal after appeal. But none of his appeals over 12 years worked, and he was scheduled to be executed on May 27, 1994. The day before his execution, he was supposed to be taken to a different cell in the Washington State Penitentiary that was closer to the gallows. Campbell refused to cooperate. He lay on the floor and was non-compliant, so correctional officers used pepper spray on him. His last meal was fish sticks, tossed green salad, scalloped potatoes, and a cherry tart. He refused to eat. He also refused to walk to the gallows. He needed to be strapped to a board and carried to the trap door. While he was strapped to the board, he moved his head to avoid them putting the hood over his head and the noose around his neck. It took them about a minute and a half to get the hood and noose on him. He did not have any final words. Then at 12:12 a.m., he dropped through the trap door. 39-year-old Charles Campbell was pronounced dead 2 minutes later. An autopsy revealed he had broken his neck, so his death was quick. After Campbell was executed, prison officials revealed that he had improvised weapons, like a sharpened piece of metal, in his cell. Hallie Seaman was murdered 4 months after Renee Wicklund was raped. Unfortunately, at the time, Campbell was wanted by the police, but they couldn't find him. After Charles Campbell's DNA was linked to the murder in August 2023, the police said that the murder of 25-year-old Hallie Seaman was officially solved. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Like we said in the opening, if you have any cases to suggest, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com. But that's all for today. Thank you again for listening. Please take care of yourself and stay safe.